This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:06. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn, and we're now looking at suggestions for a federal job guarantee program to tackle unemployment. And this is coming as UMNO Information Chief Shahril Hamdan raised this issue amid this rise in unemployment that we're seeing as a result of the pandemic. So conceptually, a job guarantee plan would mean that the government would provide jobs for every working Malaysian who's out of a job, and you might wonder how they'd be paid. In short, through taxpayers' money. So the concept isn't new. In the US, for instance, politicians like Bernie Sanders have repeatedly fought for it. And in terms of ideals, economists have praised its merits. Theoretically, it would eliminate poverty, boost GDP, and uplift marginalized communities. And this would include OKUs, individuals with criminal records. The list goes on. But back to Shahril's suggestion for the Malaysian government. The bottom line is that his argument is based on previous comments that they're not doing enough. In short, that the recent stimulus packages don't do as much to address jobs as they do the economy at large. And going beyond the perspective that's being put forth here, there has been a general sentiment among economists that more does need to be done about jobs. So in terms of where things stand now, the Statistics Department found that from April to May, the unemployment rate increased from 5% to 5.3%, which means that the current number of unemployed individuals is now more than 826,000. And this is especially worrying because that is the highest figure in 30 years. So what do you think of this? What do you make of a job guarantee plan, or at least based on what we know of it? You can let us know by calling 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. But for our show, we're going to be headed to the source. We are joined now by Shahril Hamdan, Deputy Chief of UMNO Youth. Shahril, thanks for joining us. First off, can you quickly sum up what a federal job guarantee program would entail?
So a federal job guarantee program is, as the name suggests, a federally funded job guarantee in which any person who is involuntarily employed, and involuntary employment means you're looking for a job but you can't find one, is provided a job by the state. Meaning if you want a job, you will get a job offer. Those jobs could be anything around stuff that the society needs to improve the standard of living. It's jobs that, you know, by definition, the private sector does not provide in enough numbers. And jobs that improve our long-term economic goals and sustainability. So stuff around green jobs could be examples of things that we would put under such a program. But as I suppose as an introduction, it's a different way of looking at employment and unemployment altogether, in the sense that this is the only scheme, only idea that would guarantee zero unemployment, at least zero involuntary unemployment.
Right. So on that note then, what are the upsides of a job guarantee initiative?
I guess that's the biggest thing, in which particularly the public sector, the state funds the program. So it would cost a lot of money, and I imagine we want to talk about it at some point. It would cost a lot of money, but this would be a way to ensure that we don't just indirectly incentivize the private sector to create jobs, but we would ensure that the state guarantees everyone an income based on doing something. So it's different from UBI. In the sense that you actually have to produce output, economic output, in exchange for wages or salaries. So that's one, obviously, the first order advantage. The other advantage, as I implied earlier as well, is it's not market-driven. So it's not based on jobs that the market feels are good. And this, I know, can sound quite radical to people who have grown up with the idea that the market knows everything and the market clears everything. So anyone who subscribes to this idea immediately rejects that premise and you know, externalities and all the rest of it. So we are saying that the market does not always provide the best jobs for society, because markets and private sector will always do things for first and foremost for the bottom line. So that's an inherent conflict because companies will always want to produce more output for the same input or ideally less input. So sustaining or achieving full employment is not in the private sector's interest by definition. So this would be another advantage in the sense that we would, you know, find not only guarantee full employment, but we would also be able to provide jobs that the private sector feels are not profitable to for now. And as long as there's government's intervention, we actually already admit or accept that, right? We already accept in so many guises that the market does not clear and the market does not always provide for the most efficient deployment of resources. So this is taking it to the next logical step by saying that, you know, the state shouldn't just step in here and there. It should actually guarantee full employment. The third thing I would say, if you're asking what the merits are, maybe in comparison to something like the UBI, it would increase economic output, right? So having UBI means just giving income to people. That has its merits and support, but this is better because by increasing output, you have an inbuilt resistance to inflation, because inflation by definition is too much money chasing after too few goods, too few output. This would improve or increase output, so at least mathematically, conceptually, inflation would be managed, or the risk of inflation would be managed. So yeah, those are some of the, you know, some of the arguments for a federal job guarantee, which isn't original. It's something that, you know, books have been written about it. People are really talking about it, especially post-COVID. And I'm just trying to argue for its implementation in a country like Malaysia, which I think is more able to do so than people think.
Mm. So with that in mind, what would be the challenges to implementing something like this?
The biggest challenge is changing mindsets. First, as we've discussed earlier, people all around the world, and Malaysia is no exception, find it difficult to swallow an idea that the state should intervene in such a big way and actually provision jobs. We're used to the idea of the state or governments incentivizing companies, you know, so I suppose what we're used to is, yeah, tax breaks for employment, even wage subsidies is as radical as we've become in this COVID packages. That's as far as we've ever been. You know, we're used to governments improving infrastructure and then hope that investments come in and therefore jobs get created. And that's what we're used to. That's really the I suppose, over the past 5-6 decades, that's how the world economy has functioned or operated under that premise. So that the biggest challenge is to tell people that, hey, government and the state's role, especially in a time like this, should be far more interventionist and far bigger than, you know, ideology, conventional ideology would have told us. So that's a big thing, because institutions will need to change their mindsets. You know, the central bank will need to change their mindsets. The Ministry of Finance, the civil service, and people at large will need to buy into this idea. So that's big challenge number one. Then there are the more, I suppose, stemming from that, challenges around funding. So how do you, this will put, you know, government deficits way bigger than whatever we aimed in the past couple of years. This would mean increased MGS issuance, so government be in debt. So we need to get over the fear of debt and government deficit. So that's the corollary to the first implementation or operational problem that I mentioned. Then there's also the decision of what job should go under this, right? And who provisions it. Meaning to say, government, federal government funds it, and the federal government is the only one who can fund it because we are a monetarily sovereign country, meaning we control our own currency, we issue our own currency, and most of our debt, especially before Pakatan Harapan took over, was denominated in ringgit. That means we have control over our own currency and our own monetary policies. So we would need to figure out who decides what jobs. So the federal government funds it, but is it the state government who decide which jobs go where? Is it local councils? Is it PVTs? I would imagine more needs to be thought about that. But in my mind, it should be federally funded but locally administered. So that's going to be a big operational challenge. What jobs do we? You know? So for example, if we need a large size, we think it's going to be good socially to have more teaching assistants. So which schools get it? Which areas get it? If we think we need more, for example, let's think about socially desirable outcomes, like more childcare provisions, more elderly care provisions, which areas do we target? So those are the nitty-gritty stuff that would come after we've solved problem one and problem two.
On the line with us today is Sharil Hamdan, UMNO's information chief. After this, we'll be talking about whether or not Malaysia has the capacity to implement a job guarantee initiative. If you would like to weigh in, again, you can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
It is 7:18 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. And today we're having a conversation with Sharil Hamdan, who is UMNO's information chief. We're talking about a proposal for a federal job guarantee program. So Sharil, earlier you talked about, you know, whether or not, what are the upsides, what are the challenges that we might see in this? But now let's talk about capacity. In practical terms, does Malaysia have the capacity to implement a job guarantee initiative?
If you ask me, my answer is definitely yes. Certain things need to be changed. So we've spoken about some of them earlier in this interview. But for one, we can do it because we are monetarily sovereign, relatively. You know, some people might argue we're not fully monetarily sovereign, but we are, in my mind. We have a trade surplus. We have a current account surplus. Which means that even if you get into more and more debt, you don't have to worry about having to sell your ringgit to pay for, you know, net imports, right? So because we're in a trade surplus, that helps our position vis-a-vis making sure our ringgit value is in control. So that's that advantage. Because our debt, our government debt is really, really the high majority is denominated in ringgit. That means, again, we control our own ringgit value, right? Because we don't have to worry about any of our actions, meaning that we have to chase for US dollars or foreign currencies to service foreign debt. So in that sense, we have a lot more ample space to issue more government debt and therefore use those monies to fund something that I think really hits the real economy and really impacts people's lives in a tangible manner. So for those reasons, our monetary sovereignty, and because we have a trade surplus, I think we are, at least on paper, able to do that. So some things need to change, like the law against 50-odd percent debt to GDP ratio and all of that. That can be changed in Parliament. So, you know, that's a legislative function, but we can do it. So I'm hoping that policymakers across the aisle really study this and not be cowed by conventional thinking that says, you know, we shouldn't spend so much, the stimulus packages are enough. Because let's face it, it's not enough. It's not enough. And people are going to be jobless in droves. And unless there is a better idea, which I haven't heard, I think we should really start thinking about this seriously, because if you're going to do this, you might as well do the full thing and not just do half measures. I appreciate things like the wage subsidy. I fought for it. I asked for it. I appreciate all the assistance packages that the government has been doing since COVID. But this is a game changer. And for the reasons that we've discussed above, I think we should just go for it. I think we should use this as an opportunity to break this conventional thinking and really change the way we look at the idea of inequality and the idea of self-worth through employment.
And if we were to look abroad, for example, would you have any job guarantee policies that you've seen that have been implemented, and how effective were they?
So the most famous one is FDR in the US, after the war and post-economic Great Depression. So that obviously worked. The US government was in heavy, heavy debt, but that was also the most prosperous period of economic growth and development for the US. Of course, that's a long time ago, almost a century ago. But there are other places that are trying it out in the US right now. So people like AOC are really pushing for it. So she's one of the people who argue most vociferously, at least in politics, for it. There have been other trial programs in other places in Europe, which also have shown success. But for this to really work, it has to be in a large scale, in my mind, right? Because you can't provision for job in which only a small area gets it. And that's not how you measure success. Because our goals here is full employment. Our goals here are also to increase income. So by the way, sorry, go back to an earlier question. Another advantage of this is, in effect, make the minimum wage what it's supposed to. Now our minimum wage is 1,200, right? But in effect, our minimum wage is zero because no one can guarantee you'll get that minimum wage job because you could be unemployed. If you're unemployed, your wage is zero. So in effect, our minimum wage is zero. Only through a job guarantee program can you guarantee people that you will get a minimum wage of whatever X, say 1,500. And that means that the private sector will need to compete for a pool of labor, which always has a cushion job with this program, right? So if you want to take me away and get me into a private sector job, you'd have to compete with whatever I'm earning right now. So in effect, it would increase incomes immediately as well. Of course, the other advantage that I should have mentioned earlier is we know from surveys and studies that employers are hard-pressed to hire people who have been unemployed for any significant length of time. Even by logic, we know that, right? So a federal job guarantee also guarantees that people will not be out of work for too long. If we put ourselves to the whims of the business cycle, people get unemployed for say 6 months, a year, 2 years. It's very hard for them to get back employed, right? Because companies would rather take a fresh graduate or companies would rather take somebody who wasn't out for that long. This would cushion that period and would cushion that effect and ensure that people get more employable as well, regardless of the business cycle. So that's another couple of advantages of the job guarantee that I didn't mention earlier. So I think, you know, back to your last question, it's something that I feel the country needs. It's something that would, you know, ensure our social goals are achieved and really responds to the current situation, which is really unprecedented. So our actions too ought to be unprecedented.
So going beyond this then, what other measures could the government take to effectively tackle unemployment in your opinion?
Nothing you wouldn't have heard before. So I suppose extending the wage subsidy program to include new employees. So I'm speaking as someone who's relatively young. Of course, I'm worried as well about the hundreds of thousands of young people who come out of university every year. How are they going to get a job? How are they going to compete with people already out of a job and have experience on their CV? So the current wage subsidy program, I think, can be extended to incentivize employers to hire fresh graduates and, you know, pay X percent of their salary. So meaning the state pays X percent of their salary. So that's one halfway radical idea. You could also do the standard stuff like government actually investing big time in certain areas that the private sector will wait for government to do. So I'm also big on green jobs. So if government can really think of, I know this is a dirty word in a Malaysian context, but it shouldn't have to be, you know, mega projects that can show a good ROI. Maybe it's time to revisit some of those things and target it towards more environmentally sustainable areas. And that would create more private sector-led job growth. Then there's tax breaks. Then there is training, which I know the last package had already provisioned for 2 billion ringgit, if I'm not mistaken. So if, for example, the government can think of something like taking over the training part of the whole thing and, or, you know, for companies, for private sector companies to take in new workers, but the government then, alongside subsidizing some of their wages, also trains them for free, right, via this 2 billion fund, which shouldn't be a one-off, it should be a continuous thing. Companies, big companies spend a lot of money every year paying to HRDS. Maybe we can waive that and have government take up that portion. And it also increases human capital capabilities and all the rest of it. So nothing that you all wouldn't have heard before and nothing that really solves unemployment, because it's still reliant on companies wanting to hire people and wanting to increase salaries of people, which, let's face it, companies are not meant to be wanting to do, because that's capitalism for you. So that's an inherent flaw there. I know this might sound academic, this might sound, you know, too idealistic, but The COVID has really opened up, personally, even my eyes, as someone who was already kind of left of center economically, even more about how the state has a bigger role and should play a bigger role in solving some biggest society's biggest problems.
Cheryl, thank you so much again for joining us. That was Cheryl Hamdan, UMNO Information Chief. If you're interested in learning more, actually, Cheryl will be releasing a set of explainers on this idea soon, so you can find that on his social media channels. And we've opened it up, right? We've been asking you what you make of this. And we have these thoughts from Kamar Nizam, who says, sounds like an idea. It will definitely help social enterprises to grow, because then it will help the state from just giving money for free just like that. We also have this question, really, from Sharul Akma, who says, on the one hand, unemployment rate is high. At the same time, the Malaysia Employer Federation keeps asking for foreigners to be brought in to fulfill the needs of workers in certain industries. Am I missing something here? And I think that, I mean, the missing link in that conversation is really the willingness to do those jobs. And I think that there has always traditionally been a mismatch in terms of skills, desire, as well as expected salary. And I don't think that those solutions have been brought out yet. On the subject of drink driving, we also have this from Valerie, who says, nobody seems to be looking at the statistics on how many vehicle accidents actually occur due to DUIs and those that result in death. If I'm not mistaken, you're not actually. BFM not very long ago interviewed a professor of transport, and he mentioned that the number of deaths due to DUI accidents is negligible. But apparently it's still an issue. I fail to understand how this is. I'm in the general agreement that if you drink, you shouldn't drive, as it is just part of being a good and responsible driver. However, the harsher penalties doesn't match up. I think that there are probably more reckless drivers, as well as drivers who carry fake driving licenses around, than there are drivers who drink and drive. In my opinion, reckless drivers, people texting while driving, and drivers with fake licenses are bigger issues. However, the government doesn't seem very concerned about that. And I think this matches up to what we were saying earlier, which is it's very true that that is the case. I think that, again, if you are in a car right now and you're looking around you, you are going to see bowed heads because people are looking at their phones even as we speak. And so this is something that needs to be tackled. And it is true that right now, drink driving is in the forefront of attention simply because the government is focusing on it. And it's just a conversation at the moment. But you're right. I do hope that eventually, since the Transport Minister has been vocal on this, that we are also going to see some ideas and some action being put in place to address these other matters. We now have to hit to the 7:30 news, after which we'll be back for Popcorn Culture. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.